8. An Uneasy Journey. For the next 7 days, Modo waited at Safe House, training by himself, dining by himself, and wondering, have I been forgotten? What if Mr. Socrates had decided to go to Australia without him? He'd rot here. There'd been no word from him, nor had Modo seen Tharper, Mrs. Finchley, or Octavia. Footman attended to Modo's needs, but the man rarely spoke. Modo read as much as he could about Australia, but only 3 books in the mansion even mentioned the country, and the one newspaper reference he found was an illustration of the Taradale Viaduct on the Melbourne to Sandhurst line. Apparently, gold had been found there back in the 1850s. If Modo had had permission to leave Safe House, he could have changed into a gentlemanly shape and gone on to Mudie's on New Oxford Street, his favourite library. Then, one morning, footman came into the parlour with a package wrapped in brown paper. Modo thanked him and unwrapped it to discover a thin wooden mask. It looked like something an African tribesman would have created, with large round eye holes and a slit for a mouth. Inside the mask was a folded note in Mr. Socrates' perfect handwriting. A gift for you, Modo. This African mask was the best I could find on such short notice. Artisans here know nothing of the Maori style, which would have been my preference. Please join us, dressed impeccably and transformed into the appearance of Dr. Reeve. That persona has not been overused, though you shall be assigned a new name. We will travel first class. Immediately proceed to Victoria Dock to board the RMS Rome. Your clothing, weapons, and other necessary equipment are already packed. Mr. Socrates. Modo held the note gently. His standing orders were to burn all correspondence, but instead he tucked the note into his pocket. Mr. Socrates had given him a lovely, hand-carved gift. He couldn't bring himself to destroy this proof of his master's kindness. He tried on the mask, tightening the leather straps. It fit perfectly. Mr. Socrates must have used the wax moulding of Modo's face. The doctors of the Permanent Association had made it recently when they were studying his adaptive transformation abilities. He set about changing his features, returning happily to the face of Dr. Jonathan Reeve, the doctor face. He liked the straight jawline, the air of sophistication. Then he dressed in the same fine clothes he'd worn to Bedlam, but he chose a bowler hat this time. It seemed more appropriate for the voyage. Surely the wind on a ship would toss a top hat out to sea. He threw on a greatcoat and, clutching the mask in one hand, ran downstairs. Outside the front gates, he climbed into the waiting carriage. "Victoria Dock, please," he said to the driver. They rode east through the streets toward the docks, Modo wondering what the ocean voyage would be like. The idea of getting back on a ship didn't make him particularly happy. In his last mission, he'd had too many terrifying encounters with the ocean. "Ah, don't let that spoil your mood," he told himself. He was out of the mansion and actually going somewhere. After an interminably long time, the carriage stopped and Modo jumped out. Victoria Dock was the greatest of the Royal Docks, the largest port in London, maybe the world. This was where many of the goods from across the Empire were brought into England. He stared at the mass of workers and travellers, like ants next to the enormous steamships. A man with a wagonload of bananas rolled by. A train had pulled to a stop behind him, unloading even more people. There was a crowd of people and a host of portmanteaus, large and small, carpet bags, brown paper parcels, even canaries in bird cages. Modo made his way down the dock to the RMS Rome. He spotted Mr. Socrates, Tharper, and, he was happy to see, Octavia. They stood next to several large crates. A woman in a red dress and long coat turned to look at him. "Mrs. Finchley." He ran up to them. "Ah, Modo," Mr. Socrates said. "Late is better than never." "It's good to see you too, sir," he said, somewhat flippantly. "And you as well, Mrs. Finchley." "Yes, Modo," she answered. "Always a pleasure." She sounded a little distant, even aloof. Modo assumed she didn't want to show too much affection in front of Mr. Socrates. "I assume you are pleased to see me too." Octavia gave him a haughty smile. "Of course, of course." He clutched the mask close to his heart. "Interesting mask," she said. "Oh, this." Modo knocked at the wood. Mr. Socrates gave it to me.
Yes, his master said. You cannot hold that shape forever. You'll need it to cover your face on the ship. We'll explain it as an affectation. These are also for you.
Mr. Socrates handed several official papers and a ticket to Modo.
You're to play my son.
And what would your name be, father?
Robert Reed, son, Mr. Socrates replied, smiling. And your name is Anthony Reed.
I'll be the best son you ever had, Modo said,
meaning it to be a joke, but it came out sounding too serious. Something like sadness crossed Mr. Socrates' face for an instant.
You'll be extremely busy with studies and training. Mrs. Finchley is joining us to help you with your acting. It's almost a 2-month trip, so I expect you to be a brilliant actor by the end of it. Mrs. Finchley will also chaperone Octavia. She can't be seen travelling alone with 3 men.
Octavia rolled her eyes at Modo, and he struggled to hide a grin.
This will give Mrs. Finchley opportunity to refine Octavia's upper-class accent and etiquette, especially her etiquette.
He stood impervious to her glare.
She will be my niece, he added. Miss Charity Chandra.
8 men in dark greatcoats passed them on 2 wagons.
Our luggage, Modo realized.
5 12-foot-long crates were on 1 wagon, and several trunks on the other. Being a mail steamer, the Rome was designed to carry a goodly amount of freight. Modo was curious. What could be inside such huge crates? But Mr. Socrates didn't offer an explanation. A bell on the ship began ringing. Time to board. As they climbed the gangplank to the first-class cabins, Modo studied the ship. It was fully 400 feet long, with 4 masts and 2 smoke funnels. A grand enough beast, Modo thought. But he remembered the monstrosity that was the Wyvern. That Clockwork Guild battleship would have dwarfed this royal steamer. But it would be a fine ride all the same. The idea that this new, modern ship would take them all the way from London to Sydney in less than 2 months was astonishing. Going first class was the icing on the cake. A porter led them to their cabins. Modo would be sharing one with Tharper, next door to Mr. Socrates. Octavia and Mrs. Finchley's cabin was on the other side. Modo was impressed by the size of the cabin, the rich red carpet and curtains, and the view the porthole allowed, looking out over the docks and other steamships waiting in their berths. Below the porthole was a teak table with a chess set, the pawns and knights and such already in place. Modo picked up the king.
"I shall defeat thee mightily," he said, and Tharper laughed.
Both beds were luxurious.
"There will be just enough room to spar," Tharper said. "We shall do so every morning."
"I look forward to it," Modo said jovially.
They sat and waited for their luggage, but Modo quickly grew bored.
"I'm going to scout out the ship," he said.
"Yes, go, young sub. Scout to the contentment of your heart."
Modo strode along the top deck, passing a good number of lifeboats, which made him feel secure. He crossed under the bridge and spotted the captain, a white-bearded man watching a seaman unfurl the Union Jack from the crow's nest. The captain looked as though he'd been at sea for the last 100 years, and that was fine with Modo. He made his way among the passengers, avoiding the bustles of the ladies and sidestepping gentlemen with walking sticks. He reached the forecastle of the ship as the horn sounded and the RMS Rome began to move out of the docks, pulled by a smaller steam-powered tugboat through the locks to the Thames.
"Are you feeling seasick, cousin?"
Modo turned as Octavia gave him a wink.
"No,"
Modo answered, pleased that she might have been looking for him.
"I seem to have conquered my seasickness. Funny, when we were married you were a husband with a rather delicate constitution."
Modo often relived that trip. On their last assignment, he and Octavia had crossed the Atlantic to New York City. He'd had to pretend to be her husband, chastely so. He'd spent most of his time behind a privacy screen in the cabin, feeling nauseated. Octavia slept on the couch. Since that mission, he'd sometimes found himself wishing Mr. Socrates would arrange for them to be married again.
"Perhaps it was married life that made me ill," he said, smiling his cheekiest smile. "And maybe your French mistress cured it."
Octavia seemed to have lost her light-heartedness.
"What do you mean by that?"
he asked, though he knew full well.
"Oh, nothing," she said.
I'm only blowing hot air. I'm feeling a little flushed. I shall return to my cabin, cousin.
Modo watched her sashay away until he could no longer pick her out in the crowd of passengers on the deck.
French mistress, my eye, he thought.
In the days after he had fought alongside Colette Brunet, a French agent, Octavia had often given him the cold shoulder. Perhaps that was why she had chosen not to see him over these past few months. Modo would never understand Octavia. One moment they were best of friends, the next she was angry at him for some perceived slight. And yet, when they were apart, he couldn't stop thinking about her. Given how things between them had started off, it was going to be a very long trip.